Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio, where we bring you information about Minnesota's National Guard, the military community, Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, and Department of Veterans Affairs. Your host is Tom Lyons, founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition advisory firm. Tom is also a Vietnam veteran of the United States Air Force and a member of the VFW and American Legion. Now, here's Tom Lyons.
Welcome to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We're pleased to welcome two new radio stations to the Minnesota Military Radio Network this week, 106.1 Bob FM in Ramsey and KLFD AM 1410 in Litchfield. If you can't hear the show at your cabin, grandparents' house, or your armory, please talk to your local station and have them visit MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com website and contact us to become part of our growing network of stations around Minnesota. We'd like all of our service members, veterans, and our fans to be able to hear the stories we tell each week on their local stations and, of course, online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. On today's show, we'll discover Fort Snelling's last war, and with the holidays approaching, we'll learn how you can help kids in need. But first, it's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
October 13th marks the Navy's 237th birthday. On this day in 1775, the Continental Congress passed legislation authorizing the construction and purchase of America's first Navy ships. Yesterday, men and women aboard ships around the world witnessed a Navy-wide bell ringing. The ceremonial objective was to instill in the sailors and remind the public of the importance of and a sense of pride in the Navy's history and heritage. The Navy has an age-old practice of sounding the bell during the watches on the hour and the half hour. This symbolic hallmark effort is as appropriate in today's nuclear and missile-oriented Navy that it ever was. From their historic sailing vessels in the late 18th century to every command today, bell ringing signals that someone stands the watch. Bell ringing serves as a powerful and tangible reminder of the history, heritage, and accomplishments of the Navy and an enduring tradition of the Navy birthday celebration. To the proud men and women who serve in our United States Navy, congratulations to you on 237 years of naval history. Thank you for listening. Today's veterans are talented, team-oriented, and technologically savvy. Help good business get better by hiring today's veteran.
Thank you, General Nash. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is Stephen Osman, a retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society. Previously, he developed interpretive programs at historic Fort Snelling, furnished the fort's buildings, and managed Fort Snelling for over three decades. Mr. Osman also served in the United States Army Reserve. Mr. Osmond, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's good to be back.
Our topic today is Fort Snelling and World War II. What was Fort Snelling like in the years before World War II?
Well, Fort Snelling already had a very long history when World War II started. It was probably the oldest continuously garrisoned post in the United States Army at that point. From the Civil War years, when all of Minnesota's volunteer troops passed through the fort, the Indian War years, when it was a supply depot for the huge Department of Dakota, that department stretched all the way west to Yellowstone Park, and Fort Snelling was in charge of that entire area. World War I, the fort trained two classes of artillery officers, many of them from the University of Minnesota. New units were formed at the fort. After World War I, everything really changed. The fort became a little bit of a backwater, but very quickly, federal money started flowing into the post. The Civilian Conservation Corps and later the Works Progress Administration put well over $1 million worth of improvements into the post. And to preservationists of today, those improvements weren't really improvements. They removed all of the decorative elements from the buildings, all of the fancy scrolled wood and so forth, and replaced everything with functional concrete, but they did fix the buildings up enough that a lot of them are still standing today. By the time they were done in the 1930s, Fort Snelling was really known as the Country Club of the Army. It had the largest game preserve of any post in the nation. It had excellent sports fields for both enlisted men and for officers. You had Minneapolis-St. Paul, just an easy 5-cent streetcar ride away. You can't get any better than that as far as a city to have a military post next to. And the old guard, the 3rd United States Infantry, oldest unit in the Army, considered Fort Snelling its home. And a lot of Twin City boys joined the 3rd Infantry, and a lot of 3rd Infantry soldiers married into Twin Cities families. So Fort Snelling was really the post to get sent to. My own father, who went in about a year before World War II, tried real hard to get sent to Fort Snelling because of its reputation, ended up elsewhere. But I always wondered if he would have gone to Fort Snelling, how my life might have been different.
Stephen, a lot of history for Fort Snelling between 1820 and World War II. And the fort must have been remodeled. I think you told me last time you were here it was completely remodeled several times.
Several times.
So what kind of shape was it in just before World War II?
Pretty good shape, actually. It was a very large post, hundreds of buildings. The part that was not in real good shape was the old cantonment area. And that was built in 1917 for World War I recruits. It was used in the 20s and 30s by the Civilian Conservation Corps, by the Citizens Military Training Camp, which was for high school students, for reserve officer training. The old wooden barracks were in tough shape. They had a bunch of pads that they pitched tents on. They called them hutments. They were not very good. And so a lot of construction went into that just as the war started, and just before the war, to create the new reception station, over 250 buildings.
Stephen, I understand there's a story about whiskey in Fort Snelling, and is that the kind you can drink?
It is not, but whiskey had a long history at the post. In 1918, just near the end of World War I, a consignment of horses came on post, and one horse was totally uncontrollable. No one could manage the horse. They were going to get rid of it, but a young lieutenant named Hazelrig decided to take it upon himself to train this horse, and soon discovered that this horse was a lot smarter than most horses were, and that was its problem. He could get that horse to do anything, and it very soon became a trick horse. The horse performed at the state fair, on post. It traveled around the Midwest. It did feats like jumping through a ring of fire. They put a couple soldiers on a bed with the covers pulled up to their necks, and the horse would jump over the bed. It would jump over a 6-mule team. They taught the horse to fire a machine gun. They taught the horse to count and answer math questions. Just an amazing animal.
Pretty good shot, too. Huh?
Oh, gee, yeah. Hazelrig is transferred off the post, and the horse, again, is uncontrollable. But finally, one of the officers' wives managed to befriend the horse and continued with the performances. And finally, in the 30s, the horse was retired for old age. And as you can imagine, Army horses are usually sent to the glue factory. But Whiskey had special orders cut and was officially retired by the Army and lived out his retirement at Fort Snelling, died in 1943, and is buried on the post.
We're speaking with Stephen Osman, a retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society on Minnesota Military Radio. Stephen, how many soldiers passed through the fort during the World War II?
Well, everything changed on the post with the start of World War II, and over the next 4 years, about 600,000 men and uniform in women passed through the post. And of those, perhaps 275,000 were actually inducted here, and that includes 42,000 Navy personnel who were inducted at the post. Up to 800 passed through the reception station every day. At one point, the post fed 3,200 people in about 90 minutes. They turned the field house into a dormitory on short notice and slept 850 people on the floor there. So it was a solid processing, but people didn't spend much time at Fort Snelling. They were in and out of there, mostly over at the reception station and what they called the dog houses, not a very good place to be stationed.
Stephen, with that many people passing through there that quickly, conditions must have been a little rough.
They were a little rough, but the goal was to process them on to training elsewhere. They took the Army General Qualification Test, and it turned out that most Minnesotans scored well above the average. In 1942, that meant that 37 of the people from Fort Snelling got sent off to the Army Air Corps, where they sent all the smart ones. Very soon they realized you don't want to send just the smart ones to the Army Air Corps. It reduces the survivability of the infantry, so they started mixing it up after that. They'd interview the guys, they'd ship them off somewhere else, usually after a short visit back home.
Stephen, we have to take a short break. When we come back, we'll learn more about Fort Snelling and World War II with Steve Osmond, retired historian from the Minnesota Historical Society on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons, and we've been speaking with Stephen Osmond, retired senior historian from the Minnesota Historical Society, about Fort Snelling and World War II. Stephen, in those days, World War II, did Fort Snelling provide any specific types of training for the troops going through?
It did, and the training was pretty interesting. In 1942, the post became headquarters of the Military Railway Service, and they intended to organize 90-some railway operating battalions by partnering soldiers with civilian railroad companies. And so they would bring these units in from different parts of the country, partner them with the several railroad companies in the Twin Cities, and soldiers would learn everything from laying track to running the front office to dealing with the rolling stock. That headquarters got transferred to North Africa, along with a lot of Minnesotans, Operation Torch, 1942. And after that, the fort served as a training school for MPs for the Zone of the Interior, and they trained MP dogs, including, I understand, at least a couple of large poodles that served as guard dogs.
There is really a lot of history there since 1820.
Absolutely.
Were there any unusual units stationed at Fort Snelling?
Well, one of my favorite units that passed through was the 99th Infantry Battalion Separate. It required certain skills of its soldiers. You had to be able to ski, you had to be able to snowshoe, and you had to be able to speak Norwegian. And that unit passed through the fort, then went on to Europe. They rode tanks across Europe, ended up in Norway only after the German surrender.
Tell us about the language school at Fort Snelling.
Very important function of Fort Snelling. Camp Savage, Minnesota, was where the Military Intelligence Service Language School was originally set up in 1941, moved here from California. In 1944, it moved to Fort Snelling, and the veil of secrecy was really taken off that. That school was mandated by an early discovery that most Nisi, second-generation Japanese-Americans, did not speak Japanese, to the great surprise of the Army. And so they had to teach them to speak Japanese. So these were all college-level or college-type soldiers who came in and went through a very intensive six-month course, later a nine-month course, 6 days a week. Some of the students told me they had to study under their blankets at night with a flashlight. The training was so intensive. They learned spoken Japanese, reading Japanese. When they graduated, they served with every frontline unit in the Pacific Theater, and after the war helped really to move Japan toward democracy.
Stephen, what happened to Fort Snelling after World War II?
Like many World War II posts, it was discovered that Fort Snelling was simply too small for divisional and for combined arms training. So all of its personnel functions were moved to Fort McCoy, Wisconsin in 1946. And surprisingly, that's what's been happening just in the last few years, as a lot of those personnel functions have moved from Fort Snelling again to Camp McCoy, Fort McCoy, Wisconsin.
So Fort Snelling closed after World War II.
Closed down in October 1946. After that, it was reserves, guard, various federal agencies, the airport, and everything else moving into the area.
So what remains today at Fort Snelling from the World War II years?
Well, as the international airport was built up in the late 1960s, they took basically half of the old post. They just removed all the buildings, put a fence across the parade grounds and where those buildings had been, and that's where the runways went. What's left are the buildings along Taylor Avenue, the so-called Lower Post, Officers Row, enlisted barracks from the 1880s, the old 1880 headquarters for the Department of Dakota, the hospital, the band building, a guardhouse, fire station, bakery, quite a number of historic buildings dating back to the 1800s. And, of course, Wool Chamberlain Field is now sitting under the northern end of the International Airport.
We're speaking with Stephen Osmond, a retired senior historian from the Minnesota Historical Society and Minnesota Military Radio. So, Stephen, since World War II, it ceased to be a functioning base, and now it's something of a museum. What happens at Fort Snelling since World War II?
Well, unfortunately, the Army Reserve moved out in the early 1980s, and that pretty much ended federal care of many of the buildings, and they've been in decline since then. We have one real hopeful development, and that has been the Boy Scouts' beautiful rehabilitation of the riding stables. And I would encourage everyone to stop by and look at that building, which dates to around the turn of the century and is just has been wonderfully restored inside while preserving the exterior appearance of the building. The sports fields, the former parade grounds, polo ground, have been leased by the city of Minneapolis and developed as baseball fields. There now are plans to do adaptive reuse of some of the Taylor Avenue structures. And I should mention that Taylor Avenue is named after Zachary Taylor, President of the United States, but in 1828, Commandant of Fort Snelling as a colonel in the infantry. Recently, the Friends of Fort Snelling provided some assistance to the stabilization of the old post guardhouse and the headquarters building. Apparently, the hospital is going to be worked on next for stabilization. And periodically, the Friends of Fort Snelling does tours of the World War II post, walking tours, and you can visit the historic Fort Snelling website to find out when those free tours are provided. There also is a new guidebook that has just been put out by the Friends of Fort Snelling on touring the post with photographs of all of the existing buildings, what they looked like historically. That book is available at Historic Fort Snelling and at the Minnesota Historical Society main building in downtown St. Paul.
Stephen, it must have been interesting to spend a lot of your career studying the history of Fort Snelling.
And I'm still interested in it. I'm out there the second Thursday of every month for the World War II History Roundtable. And that runs from September through May at the Fort Snelling Visitor Center, adjacent to the historic fort. Usually there is a presentation by a military historian, followed by presentations by actual veterans of whatever historical event the historian is talking about. And that, again, is the second Thursday of every month, September through May, at Historic Fort Snelling.
And we'll have a link up for our listeners to go to at Minnesota Military Radio on their Facebook page so that they can learn more about World War II History Roundtable. Stephen, we've got about 30 seconds left, but we've mentioned this before, but there's a chapel out at Fort Snelling that's still open and operating, isn't there?
That was the first chapel on a military post, the first pan-sectarian chapel on a military post to be built by public donation. And basically the school kids of Minneapolis-St. Paul donated nickels and dimes back in the 1920s to help build that chapel. Still is in use today. There is an Army chaplain who serves as a chaplain there, Reverend Beal, flies into town every weekend to do the services. Very active organization. Of course, hundreds of weddings, funerals there every year. Beautiful place inside and out, well worth stopping by for a visit.
Sounds like a fun Sunday morning trip. Go to the chapel and then look around Fort Snelling. Stephen, we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts about Fort Snelling, World War II?
I just would encourage people to go out and drive around and take a look at what's left of the old post. Pick up a copy of the guidebook. Go on one of the walking tours. You'll be amazed at how much history is right here in the center of the Twin Cities for people to see.
Stephen, thanks for joining us again today.
Thanks, Tom.
Of Stephen Osmond, a retired senior historian for the Minnesota Historical Society, talking about Fort Snelling and World War II. Now it's time for Hire Minnesota's Heroes. With an unemployment rate twice the average, Minnesota's veterans are facing an unemployment crisis. The good news is that you can help. Each week we'll feature one veteran story and ask you to help Hire Minnesota's Heroes. This week's veteran is Army Captain Ryan Curl of Minneapolis. Captain Curl, welcome to the show, and can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Certainly. Thank you for having me on your show. I've already completed a tour in Iraq and just returned from a tour in Afghanistan. As a logistics officer with 16 years of experience in the Minnesota National Guard, I was a military advisor for the Afghan National Army. I have experience managing several support organizations from 25 to well over 100 personnel. I've also had a great success with recruiting and marketing for the Army ROTC program at the University of Minnesota. I've held civilian jobs as well, working as a health and safety coordinator for the Army Red Cross, the American Red Cross, and as a personal banker at a family-owned bank. I look forward to leveraging my experience managing complex jobs and interacting with great people to a successful career with the right organization in the metro area.
Best of luck to you in your search, Captain.
Ryan, thank you very much.
Ryan and hundreds of others are ready to work hard on their next mission. Can we hire Minnesota's heroes? To connect with Ryan, contact the Minneapolis Workforce Center at 612-821-4009. That's 612-821-4009. Or to learn more, visit PositivelyMinnesota.com/veterans. Coming up next on Minnesota Military Radio, we'll learn how you can help kids in need this holiday season. Please stay with us. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. In a moment, we'll learn how you can help military kids in need. But first, it's time for the Commissioner's Corner, a weekly update from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Now here's Commissioner Larry Shelleteau.
I recently read an article in the Pioneer Press called Hiring Veterans is Good Business. We know from experience. It was written by an owner of a manufacturing company here in Minnesota who recently hired two veterans after attending a job fair in July. The owner of this company shared the success he had in hiring veterans and the qualities they possess, such as their work ethic, discipline, and reliability, to name a few, that make them exceptional candidates for manufacturing positions at his organization. Hiring veterans is first and foremost good business sense, but as the owner of this company shared, it's also enormously satisfying that the right thing for their business is also the right thing to do for our country. I encourage each and every one of our listeners to pass the word on that hiring veterans is not only the right thing, but a good thing for business.
Thank you. Thank you, Commissioner Shelleteau. For more information, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. Joining me now is the founder of an organization called Toys for Military Kids, Les Hansen. Les, welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thanks, Tom. It's a pleasure to be back.
Les, it's been about a year since you were on, and we're going to talk about Toys for Military Kids. But first, our listeners might not remember, you are a veteran. Can you tell us a little bit about your military career?
I was in the National Guard in the state of Minnesota from 68 to 75.
And what'd you do in the National Guard, Les?
Well, I started out as a company clerk, and I ended up in the motor pool as a clerk.
And you were in for quite a few years. Did you, was that during the Vietnam era?
It was. It was during Vietnam, and I guess that I didn't have to go to Vietnam, and that's something that I regret having not done.
But we're both still here, so that's great.
That is correct.
And Les, Toys for Military Kids now is a part of the AUSA. Can you tell us what is AUSA, the General John W. Vesey Jr. Chapter 5401?
AUSA is an organization that's, although it's called the Association for the United States Army, is we advocate for all military branches, and we support all military branches. It's a great organization of business leaders, business people, regular civilians, and our goal, again, is to basically to help our military and show our appreciation for our freedom.
And who's eligible to be a member of the AUSA?
Anybody. We'll take everybody. We encourage anybody, organizations, businesses, and civilians. We meet the first Wednesday of every month at noon, at the Officers Club right out by the airport.
And what types of programs does your chapter support?
Well, during Christmas time, we do the Polytrauma Unit, which is a party that was started through Toys for Military Kids, and also helping out the families of our soldiers. Originally, it was started out to help out the families of the deployed soldiers, but now we help out all of the soldiers and sailors and airmen and Marines.
I've been to a couple of those meetings. They're pretty informative. You start out by everybody introducing themselves, and you've got an agenda, and you're usually talking about some programs that are coming up soon or reporting on some things that you've just completed.
Yep.
And you've been a member you've been associated with them for how long?
7 years now.
Let's get the Toys for Military Kids. You founded this how many years ago?
Well, this will be our 10th season. I originally started after 9/11 and wanted to make sure that the children of our activated reservists, because of their reduction in pay, that Santa Claus would come to their families. And that was 10 years ago now.
Les, where did you get the notion that there was a need for this type of activity?
Well, having been a reservist myself, I realized that when a reservist is activated, about 2/3 of their income is reduced. And unless they have a very benevolent employer, they're down to 1/3 of their usual income. And Christmas is a time where there's a lot of pressure to make sure that Santa Claus is there, and also the heat bills, electric and whatnot. And we just wanted to make sure that our soldiers knew that there were people back here that unconditionally loved their families and them as well and wanted to show their appreciation for our freedom.
We're speaking with Les Hansen, the founder of Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. Les, this goes back to about the time of 9/11, 2001. And since then, in the state of Minnesota, the Minnesota National Guard has been deployed repeatedly. A lot of the troops have been deployed two, three, four, five times. Do those deployments, did that play into the reason for this? And now that they've slowed down a little bit, we've still got people out being deployed. Is the need still here?
Oh, most definitely. In fact, I think that there's even more of a need. These soldiers have come home after a year of being away, at least a year of being away with a specific job. They've come home now to unemployment or underemployment, and their significance has been reduced. And I think that right now we need to even more so show our appreciation for our freedom. I think the fallacy is that everybody's home, and what's the need to help? I just can't see that there isn't even a bigger need now.
And Les, let's get into the mechanics a little bit. Toys for Military Kids, you're raising money, you're finding toys. How many of them how much money do you raise? How many toys do you raise? And how do you deliver it? What's the mechanism for getting the toys to the families?
Well, we work through the family readiness groups. And of course, we have to approach them because being a military unit cannot come to us. And so we'll send out a form and pretty much get a list of the ages and boys, girls, and then we determine from that based upon how many toys have been donated whether we can help out with that or we send them a certain amount of grant money. It's difficult sometimes to get the toys to the specific units unless they're local. All of our shipping, mailing, and everything is all donated, so we don't have any expenses there. Every nickel that's given to us goes back to these soldiers and their families.
Now, do you help out just the Minnesota National Guard, or is it all services?
Oh, no. We've taken care of every branch of the service, Army, Air Force, Navy, Marines, anybody that we can show our appreciation for our freedom and would like our help, we help them.
You know, Les, as I recall, you were on last year, and we were talking about holiday parties. Do some of the units in Minnesota have holiday parties, and that's your opportunity to go out and give them money and toys?
Yep, every unit has a holiday party. And these soldiers not only have to furnish gifts for their families at home, but each and every one of them is to bring a gift to be exchanged at these holiday parties. And this is an opportunity for anybody, a business or anybody, to go in and help these people with their gifts and to watch these families.
Unless you've been doing this for quite a few years, what's your kind of average dollar amount of money and or toys that you give out during the course of a year? I know you're fundraising all year long, right?
You know, it's really difficult to say. Our highest year was $50,000, and the very first year was $4,800. I guess probably the easiest way to do it would be we've probably given away $300,000 worth of toys and money in the first 9 years. So if you average that out, I'd guess about $27,000 a year.
Okay, and as the name suggests, Toys for Military Kids, this is taking care of our service members, their families, their children.
That's correct. And it doesn't matter whether it's a general's child or whether it's a private's child. A child is a child, and we want to show them our appreciation.
Les, I remember when you came on last year, you were talking about a family that had just contacted you, and they wanted some toys or clothes, I think it was. But the father wanted some shelving for his garage. Did he get it?
Yes, he did. Actually, he did. It was a very tearful reunion when we saw that soldier again, and obviously probably pretty humbling for him. But we did help them out, and I would help them out again.
Now, one of your biggest problems, I think you told me about, was to find those military families in need. They're proud families. They don't step up very well, do they?
A soldier has been trained to help, not ask for help. And it's difficult. We do it very anonymously. We try our best. If we have to, we'll send a UPS truck with the gifts so that there's no face-to-face with the families. It's not about what we're doing for them. It's about what they've done for us.
And Les, once again, this is all services, so it's not just soldiers, sailor, airmen, and Marines. It's all services in Minnesota.
That's correct.
Les, we've got to take a short break. When we come back, I'd like to talk about how our listeners can help, not just for this year, but for next year.
All right.
We're speaking with Les Hansen, the founder of Toys for Military Kids on Minnesota Military Radio. Please stay with us. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Minnesota Military Radio. I'm your host, Tom Lyons. We've been joined today by Les Hansen, the founder of Toys for Military Kids, which is now a part of the AUSA, the VESE chapter out at the airport. Les, before I forget, if our listeners want to find out more information about your program, what's the website?
VESE, V-E-S-S-E-Y, 5401.org.
And we'll have a link to that up on our Minnesota Military Radio Facebook page as well, if you forget it. Les, want to discover how the listeners can help. Of course, you're constantly year-round raising money. I know about this. So you're looking for donations and you're looking for toys, but how would you rather have that come about?
Well, we'd rather actually have the money because we have a buying power with money that the normal person doesn't have. We've got several of the large stores that are willing to work with us on this. And so the money is obviously better for us, but we'll gladly take the toys. Some of the things that we've done with companies is said to them, why don't you have a jean day where the people can donate a certain amount of money by wearing jeans to their work or skipping a lunch and donating that money.
So just some ideas for the businesses might adopt.
Yeah, exactly.
When the units come to you for their holiday parties, do they give you an age list? We've got so many kids, 6 years old, so many seven, so many eight. And does that help you with your buying?
Oh, absolutely. That's very essential for that. We try and wrap everything, if they want them wrapped, with little stickers on them for, you know, boys 6 to 7 and that kind of thing. So we have a list. We definitely don't go out and just blind shop.
And sometimes you attend the unit parties and you have a few Santa Clauses too, don't you?
We supply a Santa Claus. One of the Minnesota Patriot Guard donates his time very generously to become a Santa Claus. He's done Santa Claus for us for several years. And so if the unit needs a Mr. Claus, a Mrs. Claus, we've got it all set up for them and seems to work out very well.
Do you know roughly how many unit holiday parties you covered last year?
Oh, I think last year we probably did about 25 to 30 parties, but we have also done individual families as well that are in very much need.
So if anyone out there knows of a military family that might need a little bit of help, encourage them to get a hold of you at VESE, V-E-S-S-E-Y, 5401.org.
That's correct. We'll be in touch.
Now, Les, I know you had another program where some businesses have started adopting a holiday party.
Yeah, one of the things that I thought would be important would be instead of just donating your toys or the money, let that unit let that company actually go to a unit and be the party leader. And it went over absolutely wonderful last year. We had one company that started off with one unit, and after they were done, I think they did 4 or 5 units afterwards. I just think that it's important that if you're going to donate a toy, for you to see that child get that toy is pretty neat.
Can you walk us through that, an example of a business adopted a unit holiday party? What did they do? Did they buy toys? Did they show up? What did they actually do?
Well, one of the people from our organization will sit down with the unit or with the company and say to the company, okay, here's the list of the ages and the boys and girls that are in that. And then that company will go out and buy those gifts. They'll wrap those gifts, and they'll go to that party and be part of handing those gifts out to the children through the Santa Claus.
So does the company provide someone to get into the Santa Claus uniform then too?
If they'd like to, I'd love nothing more than for the president of a company to sit down and with a child on their lap, look up and say, I love you, Santa Claus, because I know then that company will be with us forever and ever and ever.
Now, these unit holiday parties are probably spread all over the state, aren't they?
All over the state of Minnesota.
So anyone that's listening out there anywhere, any company, if they'd like to adopt a unit holiday party, as they say, you'll probably get more out of it than they give.
Oh, absolutely. There's nothing better than giving. Receiving is not nearly as much fun.
Les, we've got about a minute left. Do you want to sum up how we can help and give out the website one more time? And let's make sure that all our listeners know that 100% of the dollars that you collect go to these gifts for the children.
Well, one of my dear friends said to me, Les, I know that if I give you $100, you'll spend $110, and that is very true. Any questions, VESE, 5401.org. You can go online. You can find a phone number. You can give us a call. We'll always get together with you and let you know what you can do. Money is most important for us because it's easier for the outlying units to get a grant from us than it is the package of toys, but we'll take toys as well.
Les, you've been doing a great job for about 10 years now. You're going to have to keep going for a while. You guys like you and I have to just keep going.
You know, there's never not going to be a need for me to show my appreciation for my freedom. And what better way to do it than to have the kids of a soldier be happy?
Les, thanks for all the work you're doing on behalf of our military kids. And thanks for joining us again on Minnesota Military Radio.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you for your service.
That was Les Hansen, the founder of Toys for Military Kids. And once again, if you want more information on that, go to Vessey, V-E-S-S-E-Y, 5401.org. Joining me now are two people that are very important to the show, my military producer, Staff Sergeant Ben Houtcooper, and our civilian producer, Adam Tilsner. Gentlemen, you don't get on the air very often.
No, we don't.
I think we try not to.
Sergeant Ben, we've been on the air. Oh, you try not to. Mm-hmm. We've been on the air for almost 2 years now. And as we announced at the beginning of the show, we're building a Minnesota military radio network. And the reason for that is, as Commissioner Shelledo tells us, there's over 381,000 veterans in the state of Minnesota. We've got a lot of fans around the state. And how many facilities does Minnesota National Guard have or scattered around the state?
63, and that's just the Minnesota National Guard. You got to remember, we still have reserves and a few active duty folks throughout the state. And really, it's the veterans. You know, they live in every community, every city, every county. We got to get the stories to them, too.
And courtesy of Clear Channel, yep. They've allowed us to make this show available to some other stations out state. We're mm-hmm. in Little Falls. We're up in, we just got Ramsey. We got Litchfield. We've got Grand Rapids. And we're looking for other radio stations to join us. And Adam, you did a little work to help put together a demo.
Really, the hardest part was narrowing down what we had. We had so much good content on the show and so many great guests that it's tough to put that really into three and a half minutes and really showcase what this show is about. But, you know, that's a good problem to have. It's better to do that than not have enough content for the show. And we really have had some great guests on the show the last 100 or so episodes.
And what we really want to do is make sure that every service member in every armory, every facility can hear the show if they want to, and every veteran can hear it, and all our fans if they'd like to.
Yeah, because you might be listening to, you know, Twin Cities New Talk right now, but maybe you got a cabin up north station that doesn't carry the show yet. Give them a call.
Or at grandma's house, or maybe on the drill weekends out at the armories.
Yeah.
So we're gonna play that demo for you. Are you ready with that demo, Adam?
Minnesota Military Radio is a weekly public affairs program focusing on the Minnesota National Guard.
It's time for Generally Speaking, a weekly message from the Adjutant General, the Minnesota National Guard, Major General Rick Nash.
Beyond the Yellow Ribbon Program, military community, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
We're speaking to Commissioner Larry Shelledo from the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs.
From across the state.
Live from the Janhassen American Legion Post 580. We're broadcasting from the Minnesota State Fair today.
To around the world.
We are live from Camp Virginia, Kuwait, embedded with Minnesota National Guard's 1st Brigade Combat Team, 34th Red Bull Infantry Division. My special guest today is Colonel Eric Kurska, commander of the 1st Brigade Combat Team.
We've been in charge of the mission for over 90 days. 4,100 soldiers, 2,700 from Minnesota. The brigade already in 90 days has logged 1.4 million miles of vehicle travel, 1,000 missions under our belt.
Hear from top military officials.
Joining me now is Rear Admiral Kenneth Norton, U.S. Naval Forces Europe, Africa, Deputy Chief of Staff for Strategy, Resources, and Plans.
It's great to be here.
The Commanding Officer and the Executive Officer of the USS Minnesota, Commander John Fancher and Lieutenant Commander Craig Hempack.
The USS Minnesota is a Virginia-class submarine. It's 377 feet long, 34 feet in diameter, and weighs just shy of 8,000 tons.
And Minnesota's leaders.
Our special guest, Congressman John Klein.
Great to be with you, Tom.
The Commander-in-Chief of the Minnesota National Guard, Governor Mark Dayton. Mr. Governor, welcome to Minnesota Military Radio.
Thank you.
We're speaking with Congressman Tim Walz.
I don't meet a single constituent in southern Minnesota that doesn't want this nation to do all we can for those folks.
Minnesota Military Radio features firsthand accounts of events that change the world.
Joining us now is retired Colonel Ed Nakasone.
I was having breakfast one day, that was December 7th, 1941, looking westward towards the mountains, and here I see beautiful formation of planes coming through Colo-Colo Pass, and after that going in down and attacking Schofield Barracks. Then they zoomed up again, came swooping down Wheeler Army Airfield there, and started dropping bombs. And I ran into the house and said, wake up, everybody. Japan is attacking us.
From stories that inspire,
Betty Wall Strofus audaciously served her nation during World War II as a woman Air Force Service Pilot, or WASP.
I had a love affair. He was a flying farmer, and he came down to see me in Texas. And he said, now you saw you could fly those airplanes, now you come home and get married. I went in and told the establishment officer that I was resigning. She said, tomorrow morning I'm going to get you a ride on AT-6. I got a ride on that AT-6. I came home, I called that boy up, I'm not coming home. He said, if you don't, I'm going to go home and marry somebody else. I said, you go right ahead. We both lived happily ever after.
To moments in history that'll never be forgotten.
This week, Larry Tillmans joins us. He is a World War II veteran and served as a clerk typist for General Patton's Third Army during the Nuremberg War Trials. Mr. Tillmans, what would you say to the president of Iran when he says that the whole idea of the concentration camps was made up?
Just like Eisenhower told the soldiers, get it all out now, because somewhere down the line somebody's going to say it never happened. The Holocaust was evil, and evil will triumph if good men do nothing.
To carry Minnesota Military Radio on your station, call 612-805-5769 or email Ben at MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com. And log on to MinnesotaMilitaryRadioHour.com to learn more about the show.
This is Tom Lyons, and I hope you will find a way to make a difference in someone's life this week. Adam, you did a great job on that demo. I don't know how you picked through all of those clips you had there. We've talked to some really exciting people.
I know, and like I said before, it's a good problem to have, but to have so many good people and so many great guests that we've had on really was challenging. But I think everyone who's heard that, how can you not love Betty Wall Strofus when she talks about going up and flying those planes?
She's great. What a pistol at her age. Ben, I can't say enough about Twin Cities News Talk and Clear Channel. They've put us on the air. They have shown that they want to support our troops and the families. And, you know, they've gone way out of their way not only to produce this, but to put us on the air for free and also to allow us to make the content available to other stations around the state so that all of our fans, all of our veterans, all of our service members can hear the show.
Yeah, it costs absolutely nothing to become part of the Minnesota Military Radio Network, which is a big thing. Usually you pay for content. This is free. You want to show that you support the military, that you support the veterans community. You know, all we ask is an hour.
So when you're out there traveling around Minnesota, if you're at your cabin, your grandparents' house, your armory, wherever you are, if you can't hear it on your station, ask that station manager to go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, click on Contact Us. We'll make it easy for them to put the show on the air. Before we go, I'd like to mention an event going on right now in Minnesota. The Twin Cities Harvest Festival in May is donating a portion of every ticket towards the Minnesota Military Family Foundation. This year's May is military-themed. To see photos and for more details, visit our Facebook page to help military families in need. And Ben, you had one other mention, didn't you?
I do indeed. Also coming up this next weekend at the Hugo Yellow Ribbon Network is hosting a free pheasant hunt. I know we've mentioned it before on the show. We're talking about a guided tour through the fields, 50 sporting clays, and dinner for free all up at Wild Wings of Oneida. It was originally open just to the 1st Brigade Combat Team soldiers, but they still have openings available, 20 left. So they've opened it up to all Minnesota's veterans, and we have information on that, how to sign up and how to come hunting with me and a couple other people for free.
And he's smiling pretty hard. Get out there and join Ben at that event. Sergeant Ben and Adam, we couldn't do this without you. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Thanks, Tom.
We're just about out of time. If you have a mailbag question or a suggestion for a topic you'd like us to address, please go to MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com and click on Contact Us, send us a note. Thanks for listening to this edition of Minnesota Military Radio. I'd like to thank our guests for joining us this week, Stephen Osman, Les Hansen, Commissioner Larry Shelledo of the Minnesota Department of Veteran Affairs, and finally, Minnesota's Adjutant General, Major General Rick Nash. Please join us next week as we talk with the Minnesota National Guard's Agribusiness Development Team about their recent deployment to Afghanistan and an upcoming documentary about their mission. That's coming up next weekend on this station or online anytime at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com. I'm Tom Lyons, and I hope that you make a difference in someone's life this week.
You've been listening to Minnesota Military Radio with Tom Lyons. Tom is the founder and owner of Phalon Partners Limited, a Twin Cities merger and acquisition firm. This has been a production of Clear Channel, MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com, the Minnesota National Guard, BeyondTheYellowRibbon.org, and the Minnesota Department of Veterans Affairs. Podcasts of the show are available at MinnesotaMilitaryRadio.com.